like this. It's a little tufted in the carpet. I wonder how old he is in carpet years.
Is it spring? He's the first to wake, or is he old, but still strong enough to keep what winter wants to take?
Lone standing tuft defies the foot. Is it luck that you're still standing? You've not been flattened too. Do you tremble beneath the gentle breeze that's displaced by my shoe? Lone standing tuft.
Sorry. Frank. That's amazing.
Flattered grin, followed by a bashful half smile.
What is up, everyone? Welcome to episode 2 of the Red String Movie Podcast, the podcast where everything is connected. I'm your host, Jacob Thompson, and joining me is my co-host and friend, also known as the man least likely to put a paper mache head on top of his own head, Alex Perkins. Perk, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good, and don't think you know what goes on behind closed doors.
Oh yeah, you got a little art project going on back there?
Yeah, maybe I'm a big paper mache guy.
There we go. If you ever decide to put on a head and start an indie band, I'd love to be a part of it. I think that'd be a very fun time.
Yeah, well, I'm no good at music, so I think we'd be perfect for it.
Well, welcome back to the podcast, everyone. As always, you can find our show on Friday mornings. I'll be posting on podcast services. And this is a movie podcast. Me and Perk just talk about movies we like, and every movie we do, we connect it to the previous one. Through one sort of point, there'd be a similar act, a same actor, or same director, cinematographer, stuff like that. So last week, we talked about Killing Them Softly, and we like Soup McNairy so much that we decided, hey, let's do that movie with him. So we chose Frank from 2014. Perk, why don't you introduce this movie for us?
Yeah, all right. Frank is a 2014 joint, directed by Lenny Abrahamson, or maybe Abramson. Who is probably best known for his directorial work on Room, the Brie Larson movie with where they're kidnapped and Jacob Tremblay grows up in Room.
That's Jacob Tremblay. I did not know that.
Yeah, that was his debut, maybe? Probably not. He was probably in like a Old Spice commercial or some nonsense.
Yeah. I still have not seen Room. I really need to watch it.
Yeah, I've not seen Room either. Maybe someday we'll end up there.
There we go.
It's just one of those movies where it's like hard to motivate myself to sit down and be like, yeah, I'm going to watch Room.
I know. And I thought about for us to watch it next week, but it's not easily accessible to watch. So I put it on the chopping block.
Okay.
But anyway.
And so Frank is a weird movie. It's about the main character is Domhnall Gleeson, and he is a struggling songwriter in England, a really bad songwriter, honestly, who by happenstance finds his way into a band, the Sorrow Porter-da-da-da-da-ders or something.
No one knows how to pronounce it.
It's a lot of letters and probably has no actual pronunciation. Mm-hmm. Because their keyboardist has a mental breakdown and tries to drown himself. He gets into the band, and they go to Ireland and record an album. And the whole time through social medias, Domhnall Gleeson's character is trying to get the word out about the band. And they gain some popularity, end up going to South by Southwest, and shit hits the fan. Everybody leaves. Frank, the lead singer who wears the paper mache head always, including in the shower, has a breakdown at that point and runs off. And then Domhnall Gleeson realizes he was a dick.
There you go. That's the movie. Where do you want to start with this movie, Perk? Do you want to start with...
Well, I'll give you a few little fun facts, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
All right. So all the music in the movie is performed by the actors, which
Very cool.
sounds impressive if you haven't seen the movie, because they're kind of awful.
Yeah, but there is some skill being like I think Fassbender.
There definitely is. I mean,
Yeah.
Maggie Gyllenhaal learned how to play the theremin. Come
Yeah.
on. When the movie premiered at Sundance, all the audience members were given Frank masks,
Oh, that's cool.
which yeah, that's earned your ticket price right there. Michael Fassbender actually, when he heard about this movie, went to the director to try and get the part because he liked the idea so much.
Really?
And the part of Frank was actually written for Johnny Depp,
Yeah, that makes
which
sense.
yeah, yeah you can kind of see it, right? Yeah. And then the drummer in the band is a drummer in real life for a real band.
Oh, cool. I mean, I did notice that she didn't really have like any lines. She has one line, and like that's pretty important, but that's like the only time she talks the entire film. Just talking with Fassbender. This was a very strange role for him to me because I think of as such a serious actor. Like, 'cause I think of Fassbender, I think of X-Men, I think of Inglourious Basterds, Assassin's Creed, which is a bad movie. But he's always playing like a very serious person. So to see him in the kind of this goofy role was very surprising, but I think he absolutely crushed it.
Yeah, he's fantastic. Like, it's another one of those movies where you don't actually really, see him very much. Like, his face is covered darn near the whole movie. So it really speaks to an actor's range and talent when they can command the screen without being on it so much,
Yeah, no, for sure. Because just like the way he, just like the tone he uses when he speaks is very unique and very like deliberate. And yeah, I was just very impressed with him. Honestly, all the acting in the movie is fantastic. And
Yeah, really, really top to bottom.
yeah, I think the cinematography as well. I think it was just shot beautifully well. Some like the group shots are really good, and just like the environment shots. Like I think it was just very well made. And I looked at the cinematographer because I was curious what else he'd done, and this is pretty much his only like big thing. So that was surprising because I'm like this guy's got some talent. He got some really nice shots in here. But overall, Perk, what do you think of this movie? Why do you like it? Because you've seen this before. So what do you enjoy about this movie?
Yeah, I love this movie. I love it even more. Because I hadn't seen it since years ago. So this was a refresher for me. But it's just such a fun, interesting concept. It's like nothing you've ever seen. It's the story's original. Although it's kind of based on some real life people, but the structure is like kind of unique, and all the acting is fantastic, and just top like it adds up. It's summatively it's just a fantastic movie. There's not really, and it's also one of those. This would come up in my recommendations later. It's a movie where, like, you gradually learn that your protagonist is the bad guy. And that's always such an interesting dynamic when you wind up like rooting so heavily against the main character. It's like hard to watch in a good way.
No, that you just hit on the point for me is which is I went through like a roller coaster of emotions of if I like this movie or not. Because when you start out, like you say, like, oh, this underdog guy is like trying to make it as an artist, and then he kind of finds some community with his band, and like it's hard to say because you mentioned like, they're pretty bad, and I can't tell like, are they bad or are they just like very niche? Because music is so subjective. I don't have a good way of like knowing like is this bad music or good music, but.
They're pretty much painted as like visionaries, like not bad, but out there. I mean, that's always how things start out, just really out there and
Yeah, 'cause like
ahead of their time.
a lot of the music they play is like kind of more spoken word stuff that like doesn't make a ton of sense, but it's kind of a general theme with the lyrics, and then the music behind it's very kind of just I'm not good at describing music with words. It's very just kind of looping but like powerful and just kind of like
Irreverent.
Yeah, and just very, very weird sounds for sure. Very weird sounds.
Yeah.
A lot of synth shit, but it's hard for me to say it's bad. 'Cause I was kind of like nodding my head along with some of the songs they're playing, even if it was like super weird.
True.
But anyway, as you say, with Domhnall Gleeson, like, you want him to kind of find his way and find his voice as an artist, but you realize by the end of the movie, he's like, no, this guy is just not a good musician. Like, he just, for whatever reason, whether he doesn't have enough natural talent or what, he just, like, is not good at, like, creating music originally. And he craves it so badly, and he craves the fame, that he ends up taking down this other band in the process. And so, like, for the first set movie, when they're out in the woods, like, recording the album, like, this is, like, really fun. I like this movie. And then when it starts getting into the South by Southwest stuff, I'm like, I don't know if I like this as much, because it just, like, it made me uncomfortable. And then by the end, you realize, like, oh, no, you're right. He is the villain. And it was just about this group of people trying to just honestly, like, be in a group that everyone accepts each other and just, you know, enjoys making music. And he just kind of came in and tried to hijack it. And thankfully, he realizes that at the end. And he doesn't stay the bad guy, I guess. But so, yeah, I think overall, I end up really liking this movie. I think I would recommend it to people. I think it's worth watching for sure.
And what you kind of watching back and thinking about it, the first scene is really powerful to me, because it's essentially Domhnall Gleeson's, it's John, right?
Yeah.
John is just walking around and trying to come up with song ideas by just looking at stuff, like, lady in the red shirt, where are you going with that bag?
Yep. Like,
and it's just, it immediately sets up that he is an awful songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, from the go, you know he sucks. So it's interesting to see, like, him try and, you know, work through it and, like, play his music, and they're like, oh, it's terrible. And it doesn't, you know, sound terrible, but we know he's bad. Like,
yeah.
We've established that he's bad at it. And so, like, when he, like, talks about his, you know, this is his trauma, this is his moment, it's like, no, dude, you're just bad at writing music. And I think that's something that ends up getting tied in when he goes to talk to Frank's parents.
Mm-hmm.
And he's mm-hmm. like, it's just so crazy that, you know, this trauma inspired such great music. And they're like, no, Frank was musical before The Mask.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a pretty powerful statement on you are not your trauma. And trauma does not have to be the source, like, for art. You know what I mean?
One of my favorite quotes in this movie is John is thinking about Frank, and he's like, he's learning about Frank. Excuse me, Neri tells him, like, oh, yeah, like, he grew up in Kansas, and he was in a mental hospital. And John's kind of walking away. He goes, miserable childhood, mental illness. Where do I find that kind of inspiration? You know? Because, like, mm-hmm. he thinks that that's, like, the reason why Frank is so good. And, yeah, touching again on that suburbia scene of, it's mirrored, like, in the beginning of the movie, he's out trying to get lyrics, and then he's walking through his neighborhood, and there's the kid on the bike that almost hits him, and then the guy washing his car, yep. and then people say hi, and then it's mirrored again. At the end of the movie, he's walking through Frank's neighborhood and see the exact same thing, and he finds out that, like, Frank's just like, oh, just like him, kind of a regular guy that grew up in suburbia. And I think, ironically, the best song that John writes in the entire movie is in the beginning when he gets back home, and he starts writing that song about suburbia being kind of a prison. And then he thinks it's shit, and he, like, stops, and he, like, throws it away. But that was, like, to me, the only time that, like, he actually had something decent when he was talking about kind of his own experience. But the rest of it, he's just kind of just chasing this idea of, like you said, like, that trauma, or there's something, you have to have something unique that happened to you or bad that happened to you to make some, like, good art, which is just not the case. But it also makes me think of in BoJack Horseman, which we are both very big fans of, Diane kind of goes through the same journey. In the final season, there's the idea of, you know, if you did experience trauma, you should, like, write about it and kind of, like, monetize it, or else, like, what was the point? Or, like, if your trauma doesn't, like, make good, you can't make good art out of it, then what was even the point of having it?
Sometimes trauma is just trauma.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't necessarily, it doesn't have to be your muse.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that, because I was kind of left the movie, one of my only complaints really is that I wish they would have gone more into kind of mental health stuff, and maybe it was better they didn't, but I kind of wish they would have just hit some of those themes a little bit harder of you are not your trauma. And because I think they tackle mental health relatively well in this movie. I mean, there are things that happen with Scoot McNairy's character with him, you know, he used to be in a mental hospital, but he's kind of okay now. But then he's having suicidal thoughts, and his friends like help him out of it. But then he ends up committing suicide after they finish recording the album, which is like, you know, really hard to watch.
Really, really incredible scene.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like, I sorry to interrupt.
No, go for it.
It's like morning. John walks out of his cabin having a cup of coffee and dead quiet. No soundtrack at all. No, like, just the nature sounds. And then it cuts to a long shot. And, like, if you're watching, you don't even really notice. It's just a wide of the backyard. And you see, like, you can see off in the distance a guy in a Frank head.
Yeah, there's, like, something over there. Tree. Yeah.
Yeah, I had to rewind because I was like, wait, was it actually? Yeah, it's back there. And then it cuts back to John and, like, his realization, and cuts back to a close-up of Don in the tree. And it's just, oh, that scene hits like a truck.
Yeah.
Just based on, like, the whole way it's put together. I really like how that was composed. And, yeah, what you're saying about touching on mental health, they didn't do it so much literally, but I think there's points in here that, like, you can glean some stuff off of, like, you are not your trauma.
Right.
Or, 'cause Don's pretty much whole character is he just wants to be Frank, his whole thing is he so desperately wants to not be himself and wants to be Frank, and it leads to his demise. And that's you can, like, from that kind of get, it's okay to be you. Like, you're good enough. You don't have to be someone else.
Right.
So it's definitely not, like, written in there with a bunch of mental health analysis. It's, for most of the characters, just like I was in a mental hospital. But I think you can kind of see some of the characters and learn a little bit.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. There's definitely, like you said, like, lessons to take away. I don't know if I like that it wasn't explicitly said, or if I wish they would have been a little more explicit. I guess, I don't know, without seeing that movie, I wouldn't know what that would be like. But another character I want to talk about was Clara, or Clara. I'm all over the place with this character. I don't know if I like her or not. I think the only thing I definitely think didn't need to be in the movie was the sex scene of her and John having sex. I'm like, that just, like, I feel like they just put that in to give them an excuse to, like, actually talk. But besides that point, like, you see her as the villain because you think John is the hero, right?
Right.
But then, because you think, too, like, if John genuinely believes that this band is actually, like, good and should be discovered, then, yeah, it does make sense that you want more people to see them. But Clara is the one who can see that, well, if we do this too fast or something, then, you know, it's going to end in tragedy, which it ends up doing. So it's hard because, like, she had vision, but also she's, like, an asshole the entire movie, so I just don't really know how I feel about her.
Yeah, I think that's another kind of a neat subversion is, like, and that this isn't unique. This stuff happens where you've got a bad guy the whole movie, and then it's like, oops, Severus Snape actually was a good guy the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, she's literally, because we're set up with, you know, John's the protagonist, Clara's awful to him, so she's the antagonist, right? And then towards the end of the film, we find out the protagonist is just a bad guy. The antagonist actually just was trying to protect Frank. So she's actually, the antagonist is the good guy. Like, from perspectives kind of switch, and I think that's a nice balance. But yeah, no, I like her or hate her, you cannot fault Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Oh no, yeah,
who she's does a fantastic job.
Yeah, for sure. Going back to John's character, John wants to be Frank, but I think more accurately, he wants to be famous for being a musician, and he thinks Frank is capable of that, so he, like, tries to mimic him. But I think we see that with him tweeting out just absolute shit that doesn't matter in the beginning of the movie, right? Which is, like, I don't know if I can say that age well or not, because it just feels like old Twitter, because it was in 2014, but just, like, and maybe it's still as representative Twitter today. I see mostly, like, more comedy stuff, so maybe I'm, you know, not fully aware of everything. But just like the, I don't even know what he said, like, tried working on songs all day, time for dinner, hashtag nom nom nom. It's like so cringy, you know, and he's just like, it just feels like he's just trying to become famous, trying to get a following, and he wants to like, from being a musician, which, like, makes sense. A lot of people have that dream, but you're watching this movie, and you realize that he has to accept the fact that he's just not a good musician. Like, it's just, this isn't for him, which sucks, because having to accept that fact is, you know, no one wants to do it, but it becomes more and more clear as you watch the movie that, like, oh, yeah, like, he just needs to wake up from this dream he's in, because it's not going to happen. Yeah. It's freaking like the comedy of this movie. There's a lot of funny shit. And I think when they're first at the cabin and, like, sampling a bunch of different sounds in nature, one of my favorite lines was they're, like, sampling a door closing. And Frank goes, like, oh, yeah, this is great. We can make an entire album out of this one sound. But, yeah, there's some really good shit in there. Do you have any, like, favorite comedy moments?
I really like the... It's not super funny, but the Michael Fassbender describing his facial expressions.
Oh, yeah. That's such, like, a great bit.
Like, proud smile that fades into a bashful grin. Like,
yes, yes.
I cracked up at those for sure.
I could have done with more of that, honestly. I don't like Maggie Gyllenhaal shuts that down pretty quick.
Yeah.
But that was really funny.
I also like the moment at the end when it's just John and Frank at South by Southwest, and Frank keels over because of how bad John's music is.
He just, like, can't handle it.
Yeah, he just simply can't handle how bad the music is.
Yeah. Well, so, yeah, so, you know, the South by Southwest section, with Frank in particular, he starts to... What's your take on him, like... Because he's, like, he is listening to John, right? Where he's like, oh, yeah, we should be more popular. We should do this, this, this. And then he kind of just... I don't know what the word is. Like, he kind of just, like, overloads almost. And... is acting like, oh, everything's great, but it's not. Like, what was your take on that? Was that his mental illness kind of manifesting, and maybe, like, anxiety manifesting, or, you know, like, what was your take on that whole part?
Yeah, I think that he thinks logically that, like, what John's saying is right, like, oh, we're a band, oh, we should have fans, oh, we have fans, mm-hmm. oh, we should go play for the fans, but yeah. His, like, logical following there is counter to his illness and his mental state, where clearly, like, this overstimulation is just not what he needs.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's kind of shown at the very last scene where, well, one, John goes to his house and he's like, I can't, I'm trying to play, but it's not coming out right. But then he goes back to the band at the bar, and then they're able to, like, kind of sing that song in the end, and everything's kind of back to normal. And that's in a very calm setting, right? There's not really fans there. There's people, like, in the back, but...
Yeah, there's, like, two people at the bar.
Yeah, they're not singing to anybody. They're just singing for themselves. And right. It kind of shows that was kind of, you know, what was... The important thing all along is, like, Frank can't be himself unless he's around people that, like, fully accept him for who he is. And John needs to accept that he's a bad musician. So, like, the theme I came up with the movie was acceptance. Accepting who you are, and then where you can be, like, because of that. another funny scene with kind of Frank is just when they're at the pancake restaurant with the two, like, promoters from South by Southwest, and he's like,
they're,
yeah,
like, your views are baby time. Like, yeah. Probably two or three people there will have heard of you.
And Frank just starts, like, going under the table because he's, like, cannot handle that news.
Yeah, because he thinks, you know, 23,000 people have watched this. There are going to be 23,000 people there.
Mm-hmm. Which is, yeah, honestly, it's hard for me to believe that John's character would even think that, because he does think that. He's like, yeah, we've got, like, 23,000 views. Like, we'll have a following there. But it's like, dude, like, you're on Twitter. Like, it's hard for me to believe. Maybe this is early social media stuff. Maybe I also remember that time as well. But it's hard for me to believe that he didn't realize that. But anyway, but yeah, that's pretty much most of my thoughts on this movie. Do you have anything else you wanted to mention about it?
Not really. Yeah, I guess I'm kind of a fiend for movies with a... It's funny, because I hate gimmicky shit, but I love movies with a gimmick, like that the main character's wearing a helmet the whole time, or like the movie. Have you seen Lock, Tom Hardy?
Isn't that the one where he's talking on the phone the whole time? Yeah, I haven't seen
So
him. I've heard of it.
it's him in his car, just driving on the freeway, like from place to place, and making calls the whole time. And I love when there's like an interesting twist to the structure of a movie, and they still just have you edge of your seat. So like Michael Fassbender's only in this movie as a head, but he's good enough through the head that like it's captivating. Or like sorry, a Ghost Story where Casey Affleck is wearing a bed sheet for 90% of the movie.
For sure. But it's funny you call it a gimmick. 'Cause I mean, it is a gimmick, but also, like, I could totally see a band like this happening, like,
Oh,
in
definitely.
reality. Like, because they're just weird shit with bands sometimes, which is, like, totally fine. But I remember, I have this, like, distinct memory back in high school or something. I was watching Fallon, and they had on Shaun White's band, because apparently he's in a
The
band.
snowboarder?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he, like, plays guitar. And I just remember, like, there, it was kind of weird shit, like in Frank, but it was there more like punk metal kind of music. But in the middle of this, like, 6-minute song they're doing, the lead singer just, like, goes, like, turns around, like, grabs, like, a box, pulls out, like, some face paint, and then just starts, like, putting it all over himself, like, while he's singing in the middle of the song. And it was just, like, a very, like, strange thing to happen on, like, Tonight Show, you know? And it's, like, it's fine, you can do what you want as a band, but that just stuck with me. And so, like, this movie, I'm like, yeah, that's some shit, like, a band would do, like, for sure. And Frank's not doing it as a gimmick in the movie. It's just part of his personality and who he is, but it doesn't seem that far off from reality.
No, especially as I listen to a lot of EDM, like this movie came out like 2 years before Marshmello happened.
Well, even before that, you had Deadmau5 and you got Daft Punk
right
even.
oh right 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 yeah, those guys just not wanting to show their face. Deadmau5, of course, plays half his set with the mask off because it's probably hot.
Oh, I didn't know that.
There it's actually it's like an engineering feat. Like, he's got fans in there and all sorts of LEDs, and he's kind of a technical genius as well.
There you
So
go.
if you want a little bit of fun content on the side, Linus Tech Tips did a tour of Deadmau5's setup.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, of his like personal house computer setup. Pretty intense. But
Yeah.
yeah, no, like these like it's definitely I think the Frank character is actually inspired by like a comedian's alter ego with the head.
Oh,
But
okay.
you're right. It's not far off to imagine a bunch of helmet wearing band people.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe not so much for a singer, but
Right. Which I thought was
doable.
funny. In the first time you see him perform, he like has a mic built into his head, and he has a little like
Yeah.
cord come out. He just plugs right into the amp,
Mm-hmm.
which is like, hey, I mean, they're thinking about it. And I think he does have a fan as well, because they have like a kind of a grate on the side of the Frank mask. I assume is like a fan. I mean,
Gotta
just
be.
for him to talk. But what movies would you recommend based on Frank?
So it's a pretty niche film, but I have a at least one recommendation, based not specifically on like the subject matter, but the way that this movie has a protagonist who's the bad guy, and some scenes are really tough to watch because just like the protagonist succeeding is like a bad thing and hurts to see. Not as acclaimed as it should have been, but Ingrid Goes West. Have you heard of it?
I've heard of it. I've not
Yeah,
seen it.
with Aubrey Plaza,
I've heard the movie's wild.
who she was my pick for best lead actress that year that it came out. It is painful. Like, seriously, I don't even know if I can recommend the movie, but it's so good. It's the premise is that Aubrey Plaza is like stuck in a rut and decides she's gonna go stalk like an Instagram, what are those people
Influencer.
called? Influencer, thank you. Just go stalk an influencer and like steals the influencer's dog just to return it to her for like some cred, and like worms her way into being friends with. Oh man, it's so horribly cringe in the best way. It's just the you follow the protagonist who's a bad guy. Like the protagonist succeeding is just pain.
Yeah, no, I've heard some of that stuff about the movie, and that's the reason I haven't watched it, because I'm like, I'm scared to watch it and try to see that shit.
Literally, like, I think I watched it on a plane, and I was like covering my face for scenes. I'm just like, this is horrible.
I have two recommendations. One of them makes sense, the other one makes no sense, but it makes sense to me.
Good.
First one is, if you like movies about bands, and that's one that's a little more wholesome and goes the way you'd expect it to go, is Begin Again. Do you know this movie with Mark
I
Ruffalo and
don't.
Keira Knightley? This came
Ooh.
out a minute ago, back when I was in high school. I saw it with our friend Margot from high school, which, fun fact, her birthday today, the recording.
No, all right.
But
Happy birthday, Margo.
basically, Keira Knightley is like a singer-songwriter in, I don't know, New York or London or something. And, you know, she's just like about to give it up, and she's like just playing at a bar, and Mark Ruffalo is like a down on his luck, burnt out music producer. And then here's her, and then it's them trying to, you know, get her an album and, like, you know, get up and running and stuff. And Hailee Steinfeld plays Mark Ruffalo's daughter. I think it was one of her first roles I've seen her in. And it's just a very feel-good, fun movie about music, and I'd recommend it. I think it's pretty, not a lot of people know about it, but I think it's a pretty underrated movie. So I checked that one out. And then my other recommendation is a weird one, but for some reason it just makes sense. If you like the overall vibe of this movie, I would check out the show Over the Garden Wall. Are you familiar with this?
I've heard of it.
Yeah, so this is a Cartoon Network miniseries that came out a while ago. It's like 10 episodes, each 10 minutes each, so like it's a pretty quick watch. And I just watched it recently because of Halloween. It's kind of Halloween-y themed, but it's about these two brothers that get lost in the woods, and kind of adventures they go on. But there's a lot of music in that show, and the music kind of has similar vibes to the music in this show, and just kind of the weird people. And also one of the protagonists of Over the Garden Wall is kind of similar to John, in that they're both like way too melodramatic, you know, in their monologues. Like, you know, we have all the scenes of John like on Tumblr, like posting about everything and tweeting and shit. And I think the main character of the Garden Wall is very melodramatic, which makes sense because he's a teenager and he's worried about, you know, high school and shit. But it's very, very good, and I want to start watching it every year for Halloween because it just kind of has that vibe. So if you like music movies, check out Begin Again. If you like the vibe of this movie, check out Over the Garden Wall.
You just reminded me there because I forgot to touch on it. I really like the score in this movie because the music is like poppy and bubbly, but kind of offbeat sometimes and a little like weird. And then there are a lot of scenes of just like stark silence, and the juxtaposition is pretty cool.
Yeah, it definitely keeps you kind of off balance in general, this entire
Yeah.
movie, which is what they wanted to
Kind
do.
of the point, I suppose.
Yeah. All right, well, that's our review of Frank. And we're going to get in some bonus reviews here before we tell what we're talking about next week. But, Perk, did you watch anything else this week that you want to talk about?
Not much. I started the new season of Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah. I'm always surprised that show is still going.
Yeah, it's like record breaking now, like longest cable comedy show ever or something. But yeah, I've just seen a couple episodes and they're funny. They're pretty a little meta and very well written as usual with Always Sunny.
It's maintaining the quality.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh yeah, I don't have much for you either. I rewatched The Matrix because I want to rewatch the trilogy before seeing
Yeah,
Resurrections.
I probably gotta do that too.
I tell you what, Perkins, the trailers have come out for Resurrections, which a second trailer came out yesterday, but the first trailer for Resurrections is one of my favorite trailers of all time. It's just hype as shit. The music is so good.
Okay.
And I just love that trailer. And then the trailer came out yesterday is even more hype and nostalgia driven. So I'm like, okay, I need to rewatch these movies because I haven't seen them in a long time, and just get ready for this film coming out. So rewatch Matrix 1. And I've only seen it, like, honestly, like one time all the way through. So this is my second time watching it.
I think I'm same. I've seen all three once.
Yeah. And goddamn, it's such a fucking good movie. Like, everyone knows how iconic The Matrix is. I mean, the bullet time shot. Every kid has done that since The Matrix has come out. It's like the back, dodging bullet shit. But there are so many iconic shots in it. There's so, like, the performances are insanely good. Like, Hugo Weaving, goddamn. Like, I don't know if he got any awards for that movie, but he should have, because Jesus Christ, he's good. The only thing that sticks out, which I don't know if I would have noticed if someone else, a different reviewer I was listening to, didn't point it out, but, like, Keanu's acting, not great. Like, he's very much, like, being young Keanu, like, the whoa, and, you know, just kind of not a lot going on with him. But Lawrence Fishburne, Carrie-Anne Moss, and Hugo Weaving absolutely destroy. And the themes of that movie are still very, very relevant today. Yeah, it's just fantastic. Go watch The Matrix on HBO Max. Incredible. Movie.
Yeah, with regards to Keanu Reeves, I'm gonna shatter some people's conception of reality here, but Keanu Reeves is just not a very good actor. Like, he's great at, like, being Keanu Reeves and doing these fantastic action movies, which you cannot slight him for the choreography, because he learns all that. That's really fantastic.
Yeah,
but he's just kind of a cheese ball and, like, perfect for movies like The Matrix and John Wick. But I cannot imagine Keanu Reeves in, like, a serious drama.
No, I totally agree. I think he's gotten better over time. Like, comparing, like, Point Break Keanu to John Wick Keanu, I think there is growth there. Because Point Break, another movie I love. But another movie where Keanu, like, could have been a little better. And that's the thing with, like, with Matrix and Point Break, I think Keanu could have been a little better. But with John Wick, I think he just does the job, like, exactly. Like, he understood the assignment. There's never a point where I'm like, I could have used more from him. It's more just like they wrote this movie with him in mind, so it ends up being fine, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah, anything else you want to talk about?
No, I still got to start my rerun on Letterkenny.
Yeah, I'm debating if I want to do the whole show again. I might just do the most recent
I don't have
season.
Time anymore now that I actually have a job. Like, if I were still unemployed, I'd be through Letterkenny, like, tomorrow.
There you go.
Yeah. Did you see they released a clip from the new season today?
No, I was only seeing the trailer. Is it, like, one of the cold opens? Okay, I'll have to check that out for sure.
Yes, it's one of the cold opens.
God, the cold opens of that show are just some of the best content ever made.
Definitely.
The only other thing I want to talk about is, did you see the Spider-Verse 2 trailer that came out?
No, I didn't even know there was going to be a Spider-Verse 2.
Oh my god, Perkins. Yeah, it's called Across the Spider-Verse Part 1. So setting up a, assuming, two-part movie coming out. It's October 2022 is the first part coming out. But
You've already lost me a little with the two parts.
I know.
I'm listening.
Yeah, it's called Across Spider-Verse, and just watch this trailer. It's incredible. It's Hailee Steinfeld being amazing as Gwen.
I prefer
Miles.
Seeing Hailee Steinfeld in person, though.
Dude, I think she's very underrated as a voice actress, because she's incredible in Spider-Verse as Gwen. And then she plays the main character in Arcane and is incredible as well.
Oh, okay.
So, like, she,
I didn't know that. That's sick.
Yeah, her voice acting chops are quickly, like, you know, getting up there, and I think she's obviously fantastic. In live
she's actually just like a fantastic actor, yeah.
Oh yeah,
which is, like, not super common out of child actors, really.
I mean, she was in True Grit, but would we consider her a child actor? Because she wasn't, like, Disney Channel.
I would. No, I just mean, like, someone who got their start, you know, when they were
relatively early. Yeah.
A youth. Yeah, for, like, sure. True Grit. She must have been, what, like, 11 years old.
Yeah, which she did great in that movie. I don't know if you ever saw it, but she was fantastic in it.
I definitely will go check out the trailer, but another child actress who just is off to the races, gonna be, like, elite immediately. The little girl in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
You know, I never saw that movie.
You bastard.
I know.
We'll have to do a Tarantino thread or something. How many of the... Well, see, the trouble with the Tarantino thread is I've seen, like, all of them. But I could hold your hand through them. But no, so there's a little girl that acts opposite Leonardo DiCaprio when they're acting in a movie.
Oh, I remember that from the trailer. Yeah.
Yeah, she's really good. But where she really shines is in I Think You Should Leave as the main girl in the Tammy Craps skit. The one
Why am
with
I
the
blanking on the
doll,
Tammy Crab 6? Oh,
where
yes.
you have to be
God, that
60
skit is.
lbs.
That sketch is so fucking weird. Yes.
I
Yes,
like I
she
don't
is
know how
good
they
at
get these people. Like, this girl goes from a Tarantino movie to a skit about a doll with farts in her head. Same with the Jamie Taco sketch where the guys are having a slumber party and my wife. And
Yep.
then he yeah,
I
that's
love that sketch.
an Oscar nominated actor, by the way, for Richard Jewell.
If you're listening and you haven't seen, I Think You Should Leave, you got to watch that. That's required watching for this podcast because we're going to reference it a lot.
That's like the pinned tweet on my movie bio is watch, I Think You Should Leave.
If we're done with child actors, the last one I want to bring up is the lead in Ghostbusters Afterlife, McKenna Grace. So I think she's 15.
She's been in something before. I recognize the name.
She's been in multiple things. She was in Gifted, which was a Chris Pine joint. She was in The Handmaid's Tale and I, Tonya.
I've seen I, Tonya. That's the one
She
I'm
is
thinking of.
incredible in Ghostbusters, so I think she's got a long career ahead of her as well. So, but yeah, go watch Spider-Verse trailer. Go watch the Matrix Resurrection trailers if you haven't watched them, because goddamn, hype as shit. And yeah, there we go. That's our show for this week. Next week, we'll be reviewing the rom-com About Time, another Domhnall Gleeson joint, and that is on Netflix. So if you want to watch with us, it should be pretty easy to get a hold of. About Time on Netflix. But yeah, that's our show for this week. Thanks so much for watching, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.